hinted at in his opening. I don't think, as someone Thanks, who's Julie. Been around the game here a long time, I don't you think I've them, ever right. seen unionism in
Conference.
Such a mess.
It has been 12 There's months since I made my first speech to union leader.
Right across the unionist community.
It has undoubtedly been a testing 12 months for Northern Ireland.
Of our province.
And to misquote one of my predecessors, Northern Ireland stands at a crossroads.
You may
I believe you know me well enough now to appreciate that I am not a man given to extravagant language.
Since the DUP took over
so
the
I thought
leadership of
about how I could best sum it up.
In that time, they've turned a unionist
I could point
majority
to incompetence,
into a minority.
They've botched turned government.
Into Republicans.
Blunders.
We now have
boilers.
A reputation for incompetence. And
but when I look back at what has happened in politics over the last year, actually maybe it's better
to
say what hasn't happened
have integrity
in politics over the last
Can
year.
Can you believe it?
It's but not difficult to see why the public
and
are totally scundered with a lot of us.
Under the leadership of Robin,
we continue to rag up days without
the
a government,
at Westminster
and the world moves on without us.
Nigel Dodds
at a time
is going to lead
when Northern
a
Ireland
army,
is at the centre of one of the most politically turbulent periods
government.
Since the Second World War.
Well, I have to say,
we are without our devolved institutions.
I don't normally
institutions.
Think of Che Guevara and Nigel Dodds.
The executive
in one
remains
sentence.
In deep freeze,
but that's
while our future
have.
Outside of the
this,
European Union
going to
is debated
warfare.
And decided
a few
by
weeks
others.
Ago, they were swaggering around
the RHI Inquiry
as kingmakers.
Provides a daily drip feed of just how shambolic the last executive was.
And they've now have
As
this
that inquiry goes into areas
what shall we call
that
it?
The Public Accounts Committee that I chair could never
force?
Have reached.
Well, we've had that and it didn't quite
Ministers
happen.
Who
then
don't
we,
read legislation.
Berets. Do you remember the Red Berets? Well,
minute-taking cast aside.
Old hat. What about
and grubby
the
politics?
Fusiliers? Does that ring a bell?
It's not a political farce on television.
But the serious point is...
But rather an insight into
I
the inner workings of the Sinn Féin DUP executive who operated in a state of almost
speaking.
Permanent paranoia and self-interest.
To our erstwhile friends from Northern Ireland.
And then I reflect on how unionism has
and
been dragged
the
into
the
gutter
of this
by the DUP.
Warfare.
And conference
John
I'm
McDonnell,
angry.
The shadow chancellor
because
of the
last year I set out a vision... of a unionism that could be confident without
Ireland.
Being arrogant.
And he was even prepared,
a unionism
said,
that could be proud
a
without
hat,
being condescending.
To bring it about.
A unionism that was embracing.
He's
that didn't rely on fear and could win from
Street.
Everyone.
A man who longs
Does any one of us
Ireland.
Look at
so
the DUP
warfare,
and see this?
Yes, you If you're in a position...
What then does the rest of the
things,
UK see
yes,
when they look to those representing Northern
player,
Ireland unionism on the national stage?
By threatening the government
For
in
me,
the way that they're doing...
One of the most shocking and sickening revelations of the RHI inquiry was the complete disregard for British taxpayers' money.
Their heads off while this goes on.
How could any unionist
so
stand
say,
over that?
So ladies and gentlemen, that it really is
And that's
most
the problem.
Distressing.
The irony is that when the DUP had the perfect opportunity
time,
to be at the
course,
fore of a pan-UK
from,
unionism,
from the leader and from
their
Jim
Ulster
Nicholson
nationalism
later
shines
on.
Through.
Brexit
it's grotesque.
It a huge challenge for
it's
all
as bad
of us.
As
it's
holidaying at the expense of a foreign government.
In most of our lifetime. And I suspect that it's very unfair. But we as a party have to
Or breaching Westminster rules against paid advocacy.
Spread a message we have to
It's not
get
good
this
enough.
Idea across
It's not good enough for Northern
way.
Ireland and it's not
it's
good enough for unionism.
That we set our hands to many
it's
years
grim
ago. It's been
that the DUP have created a situation
others,
where Sinn Féin of all people are able to call for integrity in government.
Within the union,
and they've gifted them the opportunity to pull down the institutions.
For maintaining the union and a good quality
Sinn Féin,
of life.
Whose main game plan,
has a role to play.
After all these years,
yes,
still seems to be
years.
To run the place
I have to say, folks,
into the ground,
what I see going on
and I hope
today,
that people will submit and limp into United Ireland.
Needed more than we are today.
Sinn Féin, who themselves lack any self-awareness, when it comes to their own role in the current political paralysis here,
that couldn't keep their hands
and who seem
the jar.
Utterly incapable of showing any sensitivity towards the victims of IRA violence.
It was in those days.
You cannot preach reconciliation
in the government,
while in the next breath, Lord sectarian killers are shouting
one of the
up
best
the rebels.
In the department.
Unfortunately, that attitude seems always to be there.
That inquiry,
you just have to scratch
this
the surface.
Possibly have been brought about?
And although their main act of reconciliation
of the culture
has been to say
that
we could
by leadership in the DUP
retain our British
years,
identity
where
in a united Ireland.
Could run around departments dictating to ministers.
Why say to Mary Lou?
I can tell you, folks, when we were
my
in
British identity
Danny
is not something that you get to allow
happen.
Me to have.
And this culture that has been engendered of me, what we can get out of it, instead of a culture of public service, is the problem that we're addressing today. So I think
because it's ours by right,
concerned and deeply
it's
worried.
Ours by birth,
but I have to
it's
say
ours
this,
as it's already enshrined in the Belfast Agreement.
Under Robin's leadership.
But then again,
has got
their grasp
even more
of the agreement
going forward
has always been loose at the best of times.
So I would like to pay
I'm not a man given
on
to extravagant language.
To all those who work for our party,
so let me be straight
not
with
only
you.
At Stormont,
listening to
the
rhetoric of Sinn Féin
and
some within the DUP, it is clear that we are not going to
now,
see the restoration
of
devolution any time soon.
And that's not the first time it has happened.
Although there is little point in rushing back if we're just going to pick up where we left off.
When other institutions have faltered.
You only have to spend 5 minutes listening
to
the evidence of the RHI inquiry to know that there is a major piece of work needed before we can restore the institutions.
Organising events like today.
The fact is that Sinn Féin
and
DUP have strayed so far from good governance that it will take time to rebuild our institutions. Politics here is deeply broken. And the Frankenstein deal
so,
that wasn't quite brought to life by the DUP and Sinn Féin in February
very important messages
might have been enough to get
speeches.
Them back in the door.
We have a varied program,
but it wouldn't have fixed our institutions.
On of fringe events. And
nor
one thing
would, have,
I would, ask
would it have brought about the
do.
Openness
we have,
and transparency
exhibitors
that is so badly needed.
Today, and these are vitally important
because if openness and transparency are the currency
please
of democracy,
ensure that you visit the, staff.
The last executive
these
was bankrupt.
And support us every year, and it's vitally
if there is no reform
get a
of the petition of concern,
from the membership, they hear
no
our
break
views
put
and
in
give reaction to them. So please make
no
sure
attempt to inject
right
transparency
morning,
into your executive.
You get an opportunity to
we will find
the
ourselves right back
and,
in this mess before
speak
too
to them
long.
And hear what they have to say. Some of them have extremely important messages to us. So, ladies and gentlemen, as we move into our conference proper, we decided
we cannot go
this
back
year that
to Sinn Féin and the DUP colluding when
it
suited
essential.
Them.
That our
are attempting to dominate one another when they spotted an opportunity day in, day
and of
out.
Of course, we've been very fortunate this year.
When they corrupted
the
partnership model,
program,
which was at the heart of the 98 agreement at St Andrews,
11,
for their own ends,
local councils
they weakened the very foundations
Unis,
of the institutions
Lord
that
Mayor
brought
Mayor
us to where we are today.
Here. Julie, thank you very much for what
for
you've
two parties
well.
That now quote the Belfast Agreement when it suits them.
We've also
I sometimes
got,
wonder if either
Hunter
has got past
Richard
the front
Smart
cover.
From Ards North Down, in our midst as
because
well.
Over the last
and
10 years, we've
we
watched their own warped
Lindsay
interpretation
Miller, the,
lead to a race to the bottom Antrim.
And,
as
I mean,
they ram Northern Ireland into
have
the ground.
Paul Michael, who's mayor of
it is clear
Abbey,
that over 10
Ards
years
Ards
in government,
in
they became complacent,
and
their arrogance grew, and things spiralled out
of
control.
Two of those
if we are to see a return to devolution, then there can be no return to the status quo.
Give them a round of applause too.
Of course, there are unique challenges that come with our form of government. But that is not to say that we must accept any lesser form of democracy. Because power sharing here must be built in trust, it must be built in respect, and it must be built on fairness in sharing space, sharing power, and sharing responsibility. We are not going back to the days where the DUP and Sinn Féin thought they could boss the other parties in the executive. So we've proposed that the running of the executive must be put on a more formal, even legislative footing, to ensure fairness in any future coalitions. That means agendas and papers being delivered in time and answers being provided to written questions within a period of time that is reasonable. If that means new standing orders, then so be it. Because it was disgusting how some acted in the past in the executive. And it was a demonstration of total disrespect to the mandates of those other parties. And I would hope that we would quickly be able to find agreement that the days of government by post-it are gone. So taking minutes at meetings should actually be the norm. The days of paranoia must be over. If you call yourself a Democrat, you need to act like one. And it can be no longer be the case that MLAs are more accountable than the executive ministers who are responsible for the public purse. We are proposing that the Assembly's commissioners' rebit be expanded to allow them to investigate alleged breaches of the ministerial pledge of office and code of conduct. If a minister is thought to have stepped out of line, then their colleagues, Assembly members and the public must have a line of recourse. And I think it goes without saying that special advisers need pulled into line. Because it's clear when that's left up to parties, it doesn't work. So we are proposing that special advisers must be subject to the Northern Ireland Civil Service disciplinary process for breaching their code of conduct. And we are supporting an independent review of the number, role, remit and salaries of special advisers in comparison to their counterparts across the rest of the UK. But there's little point in stopping blockages and frustrations in the executive if we don't sort out the Assembly too. The petition of concern must be reformed in any future talks process. We've put forward our ideas, like changing the threshold to mean that a successful petition would require signatures from either 90% of a designation or 40% of the whole House. It might not be perfect, and we will listen to any ideas that other parties bring forward, but we have to start somewhere. And we must hear from Sinn Féin and the DUP that they are committed to seeing reform too. Because by kicking the can down the road in their February deal, it suggests they weren't very serious about preventing abuse of the mechanism. Because both liked how it could be used to prevent their members being sanctioned. But where is the UK government in all this? While Northern Ireland sits in a state of political paralysis, how is it fulfilling its duty to the people of this part of the United Kingdom? They can't just sit idly by and hope we keep quiet until after Brexit. People are languishing on hospital waiting lists. School budgets are being decimated. Would the Secretary of State accept this in her own constituency? I'd say no. There will never be a perfect time to hold talks, so let's get on with it. And if the UK government honestly thinks there is no prospect of successfully restoring devolution at this time, then they must step in, appoint ministers, and take the decisions. Stop letting the people of Northern Ireland wither on the vine because you're either too busy looking over your shoulder at the DUP or are frozen in fear at the thought of upsetting Sinn Féin's sensitivities. Stop telling us that you're the Conservative and Unionist Party. Like, that's enough. It's time to prove you are. Stop expecting Northern Ireland to accept less than the people of England, Scotland or Wales. But even without appointing ministers, there are decisions the Secretary of State could take that have been publicly backed by parties here and would benefit people's lives. the suicide prevention strategy, the recommendations of the Heart Inquiry into historical institutional abuse, the pay award for our health service workers. What party would seriously criticise the Secretary of State for moving on these issues? If Cover's what she needs, then we propose she gets the parties round the table and ask them if there's anything here they would object to. And if any party opposes these proposals, let them tell the public why. Because I can't believe the NIO would seriously think that doing nothing is an effective strategy. And all of this continues while the terms of the UK's exit from the European Union remains uncertain. As it is, Northern Ireland, which stands to be most affected and is at the core of the current dispute, has no voice at the table, speaking for all the people of this place. Just last week, Jim Nicholson, MEP, and I made our case directly to the key parties in Brussels. The UK representation, the Irish representation, European parliamentary groups, and to Michel Barnier himself. We made clear why the proposed backstop is so unacceptable to us and why it should never have been so foolishly included in the December text. It concerns me that there are some out there who either still don't understand or don't want to understand why the backstop proposal has caused such concern to unionists. And it's not just about the immediate constitutional problems it raises, but also the long-term implications as the UK would begin to diverge from EU regulations. It would effectively make Northern Ireland an EU protectorate. If this scenario were to become a reality, we would be complying with regulations set by a body we were no longer part of and we had no input into. So where is the accountability? Some seem to have adopted a suck-it-up attitude towards unionist concerns. So let me be very clear to those who claim to represent the 56% who voted to remain as a part of the European Union. Those unionists who voted remain did not do so because they wanted to leave the United Kingdom. And it's dishonest and deceitful to portray them as such. And they certainly didn't vote for the backstop either. While you continue to swing widely between assuring people the backstop is an insurance policy no one wants, to then have to refer to it as the best of both worlds, it leaves the impression there are those out there who have their fingers crossed behind their back that the UK government won't get a good deal and we will default to the backstop. This position is as reckless as those chasing a hard or even a no-deal Brexit. Let me also be clear that we want a good relationship with our neighbours in the Republic of Ireland. But it's very hard to maintain that when you continually poke us in the eye. Work with us, not against us. So I have a message for Leo Varadkar and Simon Coveney and their colleagues in the Irish government. Tread carefully. Step away from the microphone. Because every day that you trample over the Belfast Agreement and the principle of consent, you do further damage to relationships across these islands. Breaking the Belfast Agreement to facilitate the backstop risks destroying what has taken decades to build. Stop trying to exploit Brexit to weaken the integrity of the United Kingdom, because it would be economic vandalism to impose a border on our most important trading route, which is between Northern Ireland and Great Britain. And then we need to ask, where are the DUP in all this? or does it depend on what wing of the DUP is speaking at that time? Because for all their shouting of more votes, more seats, more influence, where were they in December when this backstop made its way into the text? But I tell you what, Arlene Foster had better make an exception and make sure she's across every jot and tittle of this one. Because she will be held both accountable and responsible. Because if the deal that appears in the coming weeks is a bad one for Northern Ireland and its place in the Union, people will rightly ask what exactly they were doing. What good is making threats about voting against the budget or frustrating the national agenda on health or welfare? Where does that end up? That has little to do with the national interest and everything to do with self-interest. And therein lies the difference. We are a party whose DNA is to serve others, while theirs seems to be simply to serve themselves. Earlier today, we heard from Jim Nicholson, MEP. This is likely to be the last conference addressing you as our member of the European Parliament. Jim has served Northern Ireland and Europe during a period of great change for both places. And many of you will have heard the story of when he first went to Brussels, his mobile phone was the size of a brick. Don't know if he still has it or he still uses it, but you have all heard the story. And throughout it all, he has been a steady voice, working away for the benefit of all the people of Northern Ireland. Like when he went to the EU Commission President after the 94 ceasefires along with John Hume and Ian Paisley, to make the case for money to help get Northern Ireland on its feet. Northern Ireland worked best in Europe when its MEPs worked for the betterment of Northern Ireland. And I hope he takes great pride any time he sees a plaque that indicates a project has been the recipient of peace funding. I know that he is someone who has consistently made the unionist case in the corridors of power, and he has become a deeply respected voice in Brussels. Something I've seen for myself, and a voice that Michel Barnier now pays attention to. So, Jim, thank you for your service to this party, and thank you to your service to Northern Ireland. And conference like you, I know it won't be the end. I also want to thank the Reverend Alan Irwin for coming along today, for giving us his very personal account of the hurt and pain inflicted on his family by IRA terrorism. Thank you, Alan. Ladies and gentlemen, the public consultation on dealing with the past was perhaps one of the most important consultations that has ever taken place. This party successfully lobbied to have it extended for a number of weeks after listening to victims' concerns that there was not enough time to have their voice heard. The Ulster Unionist Party has been deeply concerned by these legacy proposals since they first emerged during the Haas process in 2013. And it's important that we thank Lord Impey, Mike Nesbitt, Tom Elliott, Jeff Dudgeon, and Danny Kennedy, who saw and warned of the inherent dangers from the outset. In particular, it quickly became clear that we could not give our support to the Historical Investigations Unit, another mess that has the DUP's fingerprints all over it. We agree that the current situation is intolerable for victims, but we cannot stand over these proposals. We cannot support the establishment of a parallel police force. We cannot allow the rewriting of history. We cannot leave behind those who have had an HET review. And we cannot abandon the families of those who were murdered outside of Northern Ireland. And we cannot forget the 47,000 citizens of this country who were injured. When a former Justice Minister has said that this process may only lead to one or two prosecutions, why are we setting up an entirely new police force? Why are we not adequately funding our existing police force, which has the support of all the political parties across the community? Why are we just moving the workload from one desk to another at great expense? This party knows full well the human cost of IRA terror, and we will not allow history to be rewritten so that the murderers of our party members, our elected representatives, or our friends are portrayed as anything other than the barbaric, bloodthirsty, sectarian murderers that they were. To allow narratives to be shaped by those who brought mayhem to our streets will not reconcile our society for future generations. Far from it. Those who made the decision to go out and take a life, multiple lives, did not do so to further any political ideal. They did so to cause hurt and heartache, and they must not be allowed to continue that hurt. There is another period of our past that it is right we reflect on today. We will soon mark the passing of 100 years since the armistice took effect and the guns fell silent across Europe, bringing the First World War to an end. It was a bloody period, and we know of the enormous loss of life of those who had left Ireland. And it strikes me that even during an enormously difficult and violent time at home, those young men stood shoulder to shoulder. And the bullets and the shells did not differentiate between Protestant or Catholic, Unionist or Nationalist. This is our shared history, our shared sacrifice, our shared mourning. And the centenary shouldn't be the end of the tributes. Mid and East Antrim Council recently updated the names on their Ballymena War Memorial. Of particular personal note was the addition of Private Samuel Finlay Swan, machine gunner, killed on the 13th of May 1917 and buried in Germany, who, along with the additional names which were added, were remembered by family and loved ones, but had never received that public acknowledgement of the sacrifice that they made, and who, like so many others, went and fought so we could enjoy the freedoms that we enjoy today. We must and we will remember them. And we cannot forget the woman who led the war effort at home, not least the role of her own Lady Edith Londonderry, who wasn't content to accept that a woman's place was solely in the home, as she took up her role as Colonel-in-Chief of the Women's Volunteer Reserve, and she oversaw women taking their place in what had traditionally been men's roles in the workplace for the first time. ensuring that women wore the trousers for generations to come. Conference, our party, the Ulster Unionist Party, has a deep and rich history, something each of us must explore, as there are many things that we should be rightly proud of. But we must not just look to the past. We are also about planning for the future. We want to offer hope to the public in the shape of representatives who truly believe in partnership and making this place better for all of us. We heard from some of our local government councillors and potential candidates this morning on what they have done and what they hope to do. We've heard from Julie Flaherty, who knew from her own painful experience the financial burden grieving parents face when they lose a child. So she took a stand and won her council over to waive burial fees so that those facing a traumatic time would not have an extra cost imposed on them. It was so inspiring that her party colleagues took up the mantle and councils across the country have followed suit. And she's not done. Not until the Children's Funeral Fund is extended to Northern Ireland. And that is an example of Ulster unionism. Improving the lives of others in whatever way we can. And conference like you, I'm proud of everyone who serves for council for the Ulster Unionist Party. I'm proud of our mayors and chairs that we have here today, who have shown generosity and inclusivity in all corners of the areas that they represent. We have a new generation of unionists coming through who embody the values needed to preserve our union, supported by those who have upheld the union in difficult times. It is vital that we are ready to fight the local government elections in May and offer a strong unionist alternative. These elections will be the first countrywide test of whether a discontented public are ready to vote for change. But can I take a minute just to highlight two campaigns we have already fought this year and where we've witnessed growth? The West Tyrone by-election saw our share of the vote increase by over 3%. The Carrick Castle Council by-election, on a very low turnout, saw our share of the vote increase by over 7%. I like those not insignificant trajectories. So can I personally thank Chris Smith and John McDermott and their teams and their teams for fighting those two campaigns and increasing our share of the vote in both cases. But we face a big test, there's no doubt about that. This election, perhaps frustratingly, will be about a lot more than just voting for the person you think is most likely to keep the bin collections on schedule. It's about what type of unionism you want. And do you know what? I'm fed up with unionism being represented nationally by those who, to paraphrase Terence O'Neill, who only seem to see the nation as a kind of paymaster, only worthy of support for what they can get out of it. I'm fed up with the politics of bullying and ransom. That's not my unionism. That's not our unionism. Nigel Dodds says there's a battle for the union. Conference, I'm inclined to think it's a battle to save the union from the DUP. We must make sure there's no doubt left in anyone's minds that this party, it's this party that offers a vision of new unionism that will secure our place in the union through our second century and beyond. Because we know you can be strong in your convictions without being nasty or belittling your neighbours. It's about winning converts and champions. Because we know that the only way this party, part of the world, will succeed is in partnership with those who may not share our ultimate political aspiration, but share our desire to make Northern Ireland work. Because we know that unionism is a movement. It's a movement of people who can come from any class or belief or race or sexual orientation and find common cause in preserving the union. And I'm not going to be a unionist leader who just pays lip service to inclusiveness and unionism and then spend the rest of my time offending everyone within a square mile around me. So let me be very clear. If you have somehow have been confused and think that sectarianism, racism, or homophobia are tenets of unionism, then I am not at all sorry to say that the Ulster Unionist Party is not the party for you. Our place in the union will be secured by winning hearts and minds. So let's get on with it. And if the DUP want to spend their time acting the idiot or dishing out threats, let them work away. Because we have work to be getting on with. We are selling an outlook that builds on what works. Our unionism is not merely a rejection of a different constitutional arrangement. It's about a partnership. It's about drawing on the diversity that Northern Ireland, England, Scotland and Wales bring to our culture and economic success. Our wages and welfare depend on us being a strong and enduring nation. Trade links between Northern Ireland and Great Britain help us prosper. Those who invest here do so because we are part of the world's fifth largest economy. And that's all before it comes to the National Health Service. A system built on fairness and equality that is the envy of the world. And any threat to our union is a threat to that magnificent institution. So let's get out there. There are doors to knock and people to convince. So be seen and be heard. Because this is not the time to be downhearted about the state of politics here. This is the time to be fired up and show that we have what it takes to do better. This is the time to show that we are the alternative. This is the time to show that we aren't afraid of hard work. This is the time to let everyone know that we, the Ulster Unionist Party, are the party for the union. Thank you. Thank you. Move on. Talking about that.